What's up, Stis? That is basically German in a strong Bavarian accent for it is tapped. And this is the quote of any Lord Mayor of any Bavarian town after the Lord Mayor tapped the first keg on the local Volksfest Oktoberfest. And then the people know it's time for beer, for Festbier. And that's the topic of our episode today. We talk about Festbiers here at our podcast, 1000 Years of Beer, with Anton and me, Matthias. Hey, how are you doing, Anton?
I'm good, thank you. Welcome, everybody. This is one of our episodes where we talk about a specific beer style, of course, and about our beer styles that we have that, or our beers that are within this style. So this episode will come to you in August. It is August now when you're hearing it.
Yes.
So it is Festbier season. Well, close to Festbier season, basically. But Festbier is out there everywhere.
And Festbiers and Oktoberfest beers are hitting the shelves all over the world in August. And September, October is the big season for, the specific style and the biggest season of beer in the year, I would say.
Most definitely. I mean, Bockbier season doesn't come close. So,
nope.
There is no Radler season.
Ah, thank God.
So this is the big part of the year where the focus is on beer. And well,
yeah.
Let's talk about Festbier, Matthias. You as a brewer, just give us a basic overview. What is a Festbier?
It is today, in our interpretation of the Weinstephan Brewery, just the bigger brother of the original Helles. It's of the original lager. It's high in original gravity, it's high in alcohol, has more hops, but the balance should be the same. So it should be balanced in its core flavors from malt and body and alcohol and hops, like a Helles lager, yeah? But just more intense. So that what you have more on body and malt in it, then you should add, of course, naturally you get more alcohol, of course, yes, but you should also add the same amount of hops to balance it. And also you need to balance your production, so you need to store and mature it longer than a classic Helles.
And drinkability is, of course, a big issue.
King.
So if you have
a
Festbier that, you know, people don't like to drink a second glass of it, that's a problem.
Well, I mean, that's a problem, I guess, in any beer whatever style. In my personal opinion, the thing is that Festbiers are considered for celebration. That means you should not just drink one or two, maybe a third or more, because, you know, you want to hang out, you want to celebrate. And to make it special, the Bavarian tradition is, or the Bavarian idea of making a special beer is keep it simple, but just make it a little bit more.
More fun.
Yeah, more fun. So, but drinkability and making it more easy drinking was always the goal.
So if we look at the specifics of the beer, you told us just it's a little bit more of everything. Are there specific numbers where you can, you know, like a specific range or something?
I mean, there is no regulations or laws or whatever that is kind of constructing it, but it's more or less like a general parameter. It's, of course, a button fermented lager. So a Festbier is always a button fermented lager. So there are no Oktoberfest or Festbier ales here in Bavaria. Yeah. So that's more a thing that comes from the craft beer movement in the United States, where they made like Oktoberfest ales or fest ales or whatever, which is a craft interpretation or modern thing to it. But in the original way, they're always lagers. So they have some amount of original gravity. So it's somewhere between 13 to 14 degree Play-Doh when it comes to original gravity. Actually, Oktoberfest beers from Munich must have original gravity of 13.5 degree Plato minimum. The alcohol is somewhere in between 5.6 to 6.4% of alcohol, but a little bit plus, a little bit minus, you know, somewhere there. And the color could also range from a deep golden color to a copper and also like kind of dark bronze color. So there's a wide range of color where fest beer, Oktoberfest beer could be in. When it comes to the body of the beer, it's full-bodied, very, very smooth, very, very round and balanced. Could be slightly sweet, but it's malt aromatic. It has a very balanced bitterness. Not very strong, but recognizable. So it's there. Has also a slightly hop flavor in the top note when you smell it. But it's well balanced bodied and very, very high fermented. So it's has more kind of a sweet but dry-ish character in the aftertaste. So and that comes from the high fermentation or the high attenuation comes from a very long cold maturation at 0 degrees Celsius and ideally in horizontal lager tank.
You also mentioned the color because there's a wide range how a Festbier can look from deep golden to almost a little bit darker color and amber, basically. Which has its origins at the origins of the beer style, basically.
Correct, yes. So this is something that came... So the first Oktoberfest was Oktoberfest. So it was a celebration of the wedding of the Crown Prince of Bavaria with his princess. And so that the common people could celebrate it, they made a horse race at outside of city center of Munich. And it was in 1810. And then this kind of... And so next to the horse race, they sold food and beer. And the people loved it. So in 1811, they did it again. And then in 1812, and so on, so on, so on. And so it became more like a bigger thing. They started to build bigger beer booths. At some point, the horse race was just a side amusement. And so everyone went there just for beers and drinks and food and dancing and music. And then with the time they built bigger booths, then they started building this they called it in beer castles. And then the huge tent came at some point. And so it became the biggest beer fest in the world. Not just the Munich people like that way of celebrating beer and life in the fall season. And so all around, not just Munich, all around in Bavaria, people started making their own little fall beer fests in their town. So they found sometimes like reasons in doing it because here in Freising, where the Weihenstephan Brewery is brewing its fest beer for the Freising Volksfest, the original reason for making the first Volksfest in Freising, which was 1874, was an agricultural fair. So they did their agricultural fair in the early September. It was somewhere in between the grain harvest and the hop harvest. So before the hop harvest starts and the grain harvest was finished, so they put it in between there. And it was more like an agricultural fair, and then they also put music and food and beer there. So in other towns, they found other reasons to do so. And so it became a thing. And basically every town, every city somewhere in Bavaria has like this tradition of building up a tent for a weekend or for 10 days like in Freising or even for 3 weeks like in Munich. Depends on the city. And they sell beer there. And yeah, it became very, very popular. And in Munich, which was always like the ground zero for beer tents. So Munich is the original one and it's a big one. And there are 6 Munich breweries who are allowed to sell the beer there. And one of them is the Spaten Brewery. And they started first in 1841 to brew Märzenbier, which is a copper lager. And this was actually a very big success for them. So the people in Munich liked it a lot. And also all around in Bavaria and where they sent their beer. And in 1871, Spaten had the idea to bring that kind of beer, so this Märzenbier, to Oktoberfest, this copper lagers. Before that, most likely the breweries were selling their dark lagers, very dark lagers. And the Märzenbier was about 6.5% alcohol, which is not that dark and harsh and sweet like the others, became a huge success at the Oktoberfest. So it was much more drinkable, it was much more easy approaching, and people loved it and to drink a lot of it. And also because it was not that sweet and thick and strong, the people just simply drink more out of it. So it was also economical for the Spaten Brewery, very, very interesting. And so the other breweries, of course, also started selling that kind of beer type then on the Oktoberfest. And so it became that Märzenbier became kind of the original Oktoberfest beer. And so in a very general way, of course, there are beer experts and beer historians who would say, no, there are differences. But I would say for a more easy approach to this historical context is that you definitely can say that an Oktoberfest beer is a kind of Märzen-style beer, or it is a Märzen-style beer in a very general way. And this was then when the Oktoberfest beer style was created, and through the Spaten Brewery who brought Märzenbier to Oktoberfest. And also one of the most questions I always get from the people is, why you have a fest beer, not an Oktoberfest beer? And that's the reason, because it's only Oktoberfest beer when it's brewed in Munich by one of the six breweries that are supplying Oktoberfest. It's a registered trademark, the name Oktoberfest beer, and we are not allowed to use it. But also, on the other hand, we don't want to use it. And so the six breweries in Munich, they are allowed to call it Oktoberfest beer, and all the other Bavarian breweries that brewing a special fest beer for this season or for their local fests are calling it just simply fest beer.
Which is good, because it just preserves the tradition that has been established over hundreds of years now. We're always talking about tradition and innovation, but it's very important to let the people know that this tradition has been around for quite some time, and it is something special. Because you, like you said, you're only allowed to call it Oktoberfest beer if you brew within the city limits of Munich with Munich water,
mm-hmm.
And this is only six breweries. So it's well reasoned that it is the way it is. Of course, everybody out there is celebrating their own, Oktoberfests or Volksfests, basically, here around the area of Munich, in Germany, but also in the world. Each culture, each country has added their own culture to the Oktoberfest. That's why you get a lot of different outcomes, right?
Yeah, I guess so. So it became very, very popular the last, 20, 30 years all around the world to celebrate Oktoberfest kind of event, or importing Oktoberfest of Bavarian fest beers into the countries and take the fall season and make out of it of a beer season. So it's a thing we see all over the world. Actually, especially in the US, some of the craft breweries, especially Sam Adams or Sierra Nevada, made it a huge thing, because they also brewed the seasonal style of an Oktoberfest beer. Which is very interesting, because they made especially Sam Adams, in my opinion, made a perfect mix of the traditional beer and a craft interpretation of it. So the color and the body and the sweetness of the beer is very, very traditional, like Oktoberfest beer, like I would say like 120 years ago. Yeah. So very sweet and very dark, and this dark copper color. So this is very, very original. But then they use a lot of hops, a lot of this very fruity American hops, which you're never used here in Bavaria, because because of the climate and the soil, we just grew different varieties. So we never had that kind of flavors in our beer. And this is actually, I would say, the craft impact on the beer. But Sam Adams made it hugely successful in the US and made out a thing out of it. And a lot of other craft breweries do the same. And then a lot of the people were like, oh, how's about the originals from Bavaria? So how about the Munich Oktoberfest beers? How about the Bavarian Volksfest beers? And so our business grew like the last 20 years from zero to a lot all over the world, but especially in the United States. And so we're exporting in more than 25 countries now our fest beer. Actually, we're selling more fest beer in the export than we do actually sell here in Germany or here at the Freising Volksfest. Yeah. And so this is very, very interesting. And it's growing every year. And the people like to celebrate kind of Volksfest, Oktoberfest all over the world. And I mean, you've been last year to Israel. To Oktoberfest.
Different experience.
Yeah. I've been in Austria, I've been in Italy, I've been in the US, I've been in Scandinavia. So also seen very different versions of it. And all were great. So it's actually a compliment to our culture to take that kind of experience, the way of the Bavarian Gemütlichkeit to celebrate and bring people together and have fun.
It was just to give you an idea of how different it is in other countries. I mean, of course, there are certain events that kind of are closer to the traditional Oktoberfest or Volksfest. But just the other day, I got a couple months ago, I got a text from one of my cousins in the US, from Jen, and she texted me a picture from basically, well, it was kind of a, let's call it a party because everybody was just sitting around having a beer, but it was called Oktoberfest. Mm. And I was like, well, where's the band? Well, there's no band. Where's all the food? Where's a beer tent? Oh, nothing there. It was just like over the entrance, there was just a big sign Oktoberfest, and basically everybody was inside and having a beer. So very, very different experience, even from location to location, basically. Mm. So you mentioned Israel, which was a big party in a tent, but it was a big party with German sausages and a little bit of sauerkraut and a little bit of French fries. but it was a very, very different experience because there was a band not playing, like we know it from Germany, not playing traditional stuff, not home music, basically. Mm. There was a DJ there. So it was basically a huge party where everybody had some beers, had just a bratwurst or anything else. But there was no big menu where you can choose from a huge variety of different meals like it is here. So totally different experience, and wearing a lederhosen in that kind of climate is also an experience, but a lot of fun just to see how different people all over the world celebrate this kind of German piece of culture. It is a lot of fun, and people are having fun in their respective countries celebrating this thing. So it's a good thing.
Yeah, well, I also had made my experiences from very great one to very interesting one. Let's put it that way. But in the middle is always the Festbier. And this is what connects to all of the events. Doesn't matter the interpretation, but it's all that. In the middle, and this is what the people like. It's the beer that is connecting them to celebrating together, and this is something I really think is the specialty about it, and that's the festive character it has. You know,
yeah,
that's the festival character that's bringing people together, and our interpretation of Festbier is that it should be something special, but also something very easy approaching. So when it comes to color and when it comes to the alcohol, we are on the lower end. So we are below the 6%, so about 5.8%, so on the lower end of the alcohol. To give it a little bit more alcohol and this Festbier character, but not too much, not to overwhelm the people, and give it a deep golden color, not too light like a Helles, but also not too dark like a Märzenbier. So it's not getting in this reddish, copperish direction. It's deep golden. And also from the hop character, we give it a notable bitterness, but we more focus a little bit on a nice flavor of the hoppiness, and especially when you smell it in the top note. So we have, I would say, a little bit more of modern interpretation of Fest beer, or more a little bit a more global interpretation of the Fest beer. Not that traditional, but Weihenstephan always had that kind of beer. I can remember more than 20 years I came to Freising, their Weihenstephan Festbier compared to the local competitor, to the Grifflicher Hofbräu Freising. We had always the lighter beer, we always had the slightly hoppier beer, and then not that sweeter beer. And they always been a little bit darker, always been a little bit sweeter and more hearty and more alcohol, which was actually great. You know, we are sharing the Volksfest with them, and there are two different kind of beers that are not very similar, and but both originally and perfectly inside the style. But the style has a little bit a wider range. Field, yeah. A wider range where you can put your interpretation recipe in. And yeah, and this is what makes the beer, I guess, so good. So yeah, and when it comes to brewing it, for those who are interested in it, so we have, as all our beers, we do a double decoction on it, so a very intense meshing to create a very nice and round and smooth body of the beer.
To preserve a lot of aroma.
Yes, absolutely. To create that aroma first, we're using only Hallertau hops, which is the Hallertau Perle. And then as a flavor compound, we use the Hallertau Saphir, which is a hop which we add at the end of boiling and in the whirlpool to give it a very nice, slightly floral note. And then the most important thing is that we are, after the fermentation, we mature the beer very, very long at very, very cold temperatures. So minimum is 6 weeks, maybe even a little bit longer, at 0 degrees Celsius or 32 Fahrenheit in horizontal tanks. So this is also very important that we are using horizontal tanks where we have a wider surface where the yeast can settle and where the beer can mature, and the aroma and the beer can work on its smoothness. And this is the most important thing about the Fest beers. Yeah, and then we pack it and send it into the world and hope that people like it.
But it's not the only Fest beer we have.
Yeah, actually we also do have the Winter Fest beer, that's right. That's basically the same recipe, but just added another hop variety. So it's not that widely spread, that beer. So it's more like just here in our core area in and around Freising and in the one or the other export country, but it's actually kind of rare. But yeah, it's a beer we bring out around the Christmas season. It's more or less our Christmas beer, but that's basically the Fest beer, but just with a different hop variety. So our brewmasters are trying to bring new flavors to the Fest beer with trying out or making a beer with a new hop variety.
So it's basically a little bit on the hoppier side. So
always,
if
yeah.
if you want to try a Fest beer that is a little hoppier, but it's not, of course, it's not like you mentioned earlier, the Sam Adams, which gives you like the hop flavor. It just hits you with hop flavor.
Yeah,
so that's not it. I mean, it's
and also with its body and sweetness.
Exactly. Yeah. So that's not it. It's still a traditional, well, like you said, a little bit modern interpretation, but it's still a traditional Bavarian beer that is a little bit hoppier.
And Bavarian beers are all constructed around drinkability. That's the most important thing. And this is what we said before, and this is where I want to catch up on that part of the conversation we had, because I got sidetracked again. But it's, you know, the listener of this it podcast happens. Knows that. Yeah, I get sidetracked easily. the thing is that in Bavaria, drinkability when it comes to any beer style is king, even with the bock beers or with the dark beers. So it's not about extreme characteristics, so that you say, oh, that's so intense, oh, but then you just drink like 300 milliliters of it and then you're good because you're so overwhelmed and all your mouth and tastes is so done for the day, because it's just overwhelming you with that. That's not the Bavarian idea of making beer. The Bavarian idea of making beer, give it a character, but make it drink drinkable. It's the drinkability that's always in the middle of any recipe construction. And one of the brewmasters I get to know, he was teaching me one of the most important, and today now as Brandon Best and also sales manager for the brewery and as brewer, I cannot value that lesson enough. And he told me that if you try to make beer, the 3-pint rule, always create a recipe and construct a beer under that rule. The beer must be that good and has that kind of drinkability that the people always want and can drink 3 pints of it. Because if they don't do, because they don't like it, or they cannot because it's too strong or too extreme or too intense, it's not successful. Because with pint number one, we cover our costs. Pint number two is covering the costs of all our partners, importers, transport, logistics, bar owners, restaurant owners, whatever. And pint number three is the profit where we're living off from. And if you're not profitable, you cannot live. And when you cannot live, you cannot make good beer. It's a very, very simple rule.
Yeah, flawless logic.
And that's what the thing behind this is. Make this at least 3 pints. And if the beer is that good, you can make a bock beer, but you can drink 3 Vitas.
Yeah.
And that was the idea behind, and that was the brewmaster that designed the Vitas. He said, I want to design a wheat bock, which was considered always a beer that is intense, strong, thick, very, very complex. But there are a lot of wheat bocks out there. They're amazing and great beers, but I'm done after one bottle because it just kills you in your mouth and in your nose with all this complexity and with its high alcohol and sweetness and a great beer. Don't get me wrong, but it has basically no drinkability. And Vitus is the perfect example for that rule that you can construct a super characteristic, highly anticipated, great beer, but where you can have 3 pints of it. And then it's also economical success.
Definitely. I mean, that's the thing. Of course, you have to make a profit of it because otherwise you just, like you said, you can't exist. Yeah.
And this is the thing, a very simple rule on being a successful brewer or a brewery manager, or when you want to found a brewery, especially in the craft section, it's if you're having like this like triple imperial Russian stouts, vanilla infused, that are can be great beers, don't get me wrong, but then write them off as marketing because you will never make profit out of it. If you want to make profit out of it, because you will sell only one bottle that is going to be shared by two beer connoisseurs. They will love it, but they will have one bottle of it once a month and you cannot live off from that. And there are not enough people out there that buy that kind of beer that you can live out of it. Make out of it a marketing, yes, that you are making marketing and you're making noise with your beers. But always have in mind, you need to have a seller that is rotating, that is selling, that is always needed to be out there in the market, and the people are going buy it continuously because this is the only way you can pay your bills. And this is also how we design, or how fest beers, Oktoberfest beers are designed. They are characterful, but they are designed to drink not just 1 liter, maybe a second or a second. They are actually designed that people go like at 5, 6 p.m. to the beer tent and celebrate till midnight. And you cannot have a 6-point-something% beer, which you serve in double pints or like in a liter, in a big stein, where you are done after the first, because then the people doesn't go work. Home after an hour. Yeah,
doesn't work.
But then the people are there. They are dancing. They are eating. They are celebrating till midnight, and then they go home. So what's the secret? There is no secret. Just make good balanced beer. Don't overdo it. Don't be boring.
Make it drinkable. That's the secret.
3-pint rule.
Yeah, definitely. Matthias, I know you're you like to experiment with different cuisines all over the world.
Oh, yeah.
So what is your recommendation to Festbier?
Oh, I had so many great things to Festbier. Of course, the classic Bavarian grilled chicken, which is like the thing to do, or the big, big soft pretzels in the beer tents. They're perfect. Or very intense cheeses, like aged cheeses. They are great to that kind of beer. Those different charcuterie board with hams and bacon and cheese and pickles and stuff like that, that they also get served to the Bavarian beer tents. Perfect. A mixed charcuterie board with some soft pretzels and great cheeses and bacon and ham and salami and pepperonis and whatever. This is the perfect thing. You can put it on the table, you can share it, you can drink your liter to it. It's perfect. It's absolutely perfect. I had a lot of different things too, which are great. I had sometimes kind of this place, in California, and they served like kind of smoked ribs, which is, yeah, give it to me. I mean, they can put it in every Bavarian beer tent and they will work. You will not find it actually, but it will work.
Yeah,
especially that kind of like barbecue, smoked barbecue, like the smoked meats.
Rich sauce.
Yeah, this to a Festbier. Oh, great. Sounds absolutely good, yeah. Great. Yeah. I would say also smoked fish.
Mm-hmm.
Very, very great. This is something that can work perfectly to it. But actually everything which is kind of grilled.
Hardy,
yeah, intense. This works very good, but I always go with the charcuterie board, you know, because anyone can find something on it. We always order it for the table, you know, some soft pretzels to it, some bread to it, and then everyone can eat as much as he wants and what he wants or what she wants. So it's just perfect.
It's just a matter of being together and celebrating together, and that's what the beer is about, and that's also what the charcuterie board is about. Just sit at the table, have a good conversation, have a good beer, eat together. This is what celebrating Volksfest, Oktoberfest, whatever you call it, where you live, is all about. People coming together, having a good time, drinking beer, and eating together. That's basically
absolutely
everything.
Absolutely.
About.
Yeah. Right. So I have for you a question. What do you think? We're doing about 1.5 to 2% of our volume we do every year is just a Festbier, which is actually for just a seasonal very, very good. We have styles that we're producing all year long and do not that many volume. So actually it's pretty good. So what do you think is the share we have on export and national?
I might have to go with statistics here. So we're doing about 60 to 70% export from our total volume. So let me go with, let's meet in the middle, about in the middle, like 66% of it is export.
Well, close, but not that close. It's 83%.
Wow.
So it's like, just for you out there, guys, 17% of the whole volume we're producing is for the German market. And 83 is for the export.
Festbier.
83. So
it's a global phenomenon.
Which is a global phenomenon. But the hugest, so like the major share of the Festbier that we're exporting is going to the United States. So actually, of all Festbier, 60% of all Festbier goes to the United States, 17% in Germany, and the rest shared all over the world. So like more of the half of our Festbier is just brewed for the United States market. That's how huge actually right today this whole Oktoberfest, the whole Festbier season, the fall beer season is in the United States. So we're doing four times more beer for the US than we do for Germany when it comes to the Festbier. But it's a huge beer market. It's a huge country. Yeah. It's a huge market. We have a fantastic, phenomenal importer who's built up that business for us enormously. So thanks to everyone at TBS.
Thank you.
You're doing a great job, and also to all our distributors out there who are selling our Festbiers to different accounts into to the festivals and parties, and but in the US this is a huge season. So now I'm very happy to go back there every fall season. But as I told you, I've been to Oktoberfests or Oktoberfest events in Greece, in Austria, in Italy, in Scandinavia. So they are all great. And it's also growing there. So it's becoming more and more thing to in the fall season in September, October to celebrate Bavarian style.
And I mean, it's like when you talk about the US, it's always a big thing to take something out of the respective country's culture and implement it into American way of life.
Yeah.
And of course, there are many different people from different nations living there. So there are communities that have been built over the last decades and centuries. But the one thing you always say is that Americans are very open to implementing other cultures, traditions into their own.
But just those one was drinkings.
Well, yeah.
So, okay, you want to come to the United States. Okay, where are you from? Ireland. Okay, you have a drinking holiday? Yeah, St. Patrick's Day. Okay, when it's it?
Welcome to the United States of America.
Okay, yeah. So where are you coming from? Okay, Mexico. So what's your... it's the 5th of
Cinco de Mayo.
Cinco de Mayo. Okay, yeah, welcome. Hello. Okay, we'll put that in our calendar too. So where are you from? Germany. Oh, when you're drinking? All year long. Oh, all year long. Now, when you're most drinking? Oh, in September, October? Okay, yeah, I put it in. Which date? Oh, a couple of weeks? Oh, we love it. We love it. Yeah. So put that in the calendar. 2 months.
Well, we might have
this
to
is what a friend of me in told me in Boston is like, you know, we're a country where people from all over the world immigrated to it. And what we put from the cultures from all the people from all over the world is, what are your drinking days? We take it. We do it.
We might have to put together a drinking calendar.
Yeah, international, a global drinking calendar.
This is an idea. I'm going to write that down right now.
Yeah, the Wine Stefan global drinking calendar. Yeah, so you need to put in, of course. Yeah, St. Patrick's Day, Cinco de Mayo.
We're making sure. We're making sure.
4th of July, of course. Yeah,
we're making sure you have a reason to drink.
All you international listeners, send us your countries or your cultural drinking days. I mean, I guess in Sweden or in Scandinavia, it's midsummer. Must be pretty close.
Yeah.
So it's June, July somewhere when it's 1st of July, Canada Day.
Well, there you go.
Come on, guys, send us your drinking days.
Podcast at weinstefana.de or through our social media channels.
Yeah, send us your drinking days and where you would put the fest beer on. What is in Australia? I don't know. We need to ask Leif and Marcus.
We might be onto something here.
Yeah, oh my God, we're onto something big here. This is gonna be, oh my God, this is gonna be freaking amazing. Oh my God, we are putting that calendar out.
I already know what the social media post is gonna be about.
Yeah. Oh my God, this is great. Wow. We really need to write that down. So I haven't seen so much of the world, but give us your dates, guys.
And we're gonna call it your reason to drink a beer.
Yeah, and if you're a global citizen, we give you a lot of reasons. So it's like so, and maybe also if it would be really really help us to write us down. So what would be your your cultural or country go to food on that kind of drinking holiday or drinking day or celebration? When it's like, you know, when you would say like it's a Volksfest in Bavaria, you will go with the soft pretzel and the grilled chicken.
Yeah.
For example. Yeah. And so when it's maybe it's St. Patrick's Day, it's an Irish stew or whatever. I don't know. But send us the classic beer food to it. And also what would be the classic drink to it. But why maybe doing a fest beer to it? Like, I mean, of course, I will always drink a Guinness on Paddy's Day and a whiskey. I'm more would likely to drink a whiskey. Actually, by the way, I just now found my way into bourbons. Super weird. I never was a bourbon drinker because I never had a big approach to it. But thanks to my boys in Philadelphia, especially Mike, who was like, we had a really hearty meal, and he was like, "Oh, let's have now a shot," and he was like giving me a really, really great bourbon, And this kind of have moved something inside me. So I've now had a couple of different bottles of bourbon at home for tasting now. And I'm in bourbon now. But that's completely different topic now. Sorry for this now.
Somebody's getting sidetracked again.
Yeah, sorry. But yeah, Mike, thanks for the bourbon.
All right, Send us your suggestions.
Yes.
And celebrate fest season. Celebrate all the different
enjoy our fest beers.
There are so many.
And if you have and if you have any questions, let us know. Send us an email at podcast@weinstephaner.de. The end. DE is for Deutschland, Germany. So podcast@weinstephaner.de. Send us pictures where I drink the fest beer this season, or if you have questions, or if you have something, tell us or
let us know.
Let us know your country's culture, drinking holiday or season, and what food and drink to it, and where we drink then fest beer to it, or a wheat beer, or whatever.
Exactly.
Oh my God, this is going to be amazing.
This is going to be great. Thank you for listening.
Yes. Guys, stay safe, enjoy your time, and cheers.
Exactly. Cheers. Bye-bye, everyone.